South Dakota authors translating life here so we see ourselves and so the world sees us. From South Dakota Public Broadcasting, today is Tuesday, June 22nd, and this is In the Moment. Coming up this hour, we welcome author Stephen Wingate. His latest book is called The Leave Takers. It's the story of two people alongside an eclectic cast of supporting characters seeking survival and healing and connection near Clark, South Dakota. Later in the hour, our poet laureate joins us. Christine Stewart's latest collection is called The Poet and the Architect. We'll talk with her about the architecture of self within the context of love. Also this hour, our Miss Rodeo South Dakota, Chris Lawfrey, talks with Martina Luby, and SDPB's Arielle Zients joins us for a look at Monday's naturalization ceremony at Mount Rushmore. I'm Lori Walsh. You're in the moment. News is first.
With SDPB News, I'm John Wynn. South Dakota's largest healthcare providers have proposed that lawmakers drop part of the requirement for people seeking medical marijuana identification cards to obtain a physician's recommendation to use the drug. Under the proposal made Monday, physicians would still need to certify that patients have conditions such as severe pain, seizures, or multiple sclerosis that would qualify them for a medical marijuana ID. But they would not need to specifically recommend that marijuana be used to treat the condition. The proposal was welcomed by medical marijuana advocates, who worry that patients would have a difficult time getting medical pot recommendations from physicians. Dozens of South Dakota high school rodeo competitors are headed to the national finals. The state finals were last week in Fort Pierre. The top four finishers in most events move on to the national competition. One of the national qualifiers is Sturgis sophomore Landry Haugen. She followed her parents into the sport and says she's improved over the past year.
I've grown up around it, and I think that that's one of the particular things that's made me successful, because I watched my parents in pressure situations and that type of deal. I know horses.
Haugen won the pole bending and barrel racing events. She also qualified for nationals in girls cutting and reined cow horse, and she received the all-around cowgirl award. Sturgis Brown High School won the team trophy. The National High School Rodeo Finals is July 18th through the 24th in Lincoln, Nebraska. A horse that Governor Kristi Noem rode during the National Rodeo Finals in Texas in December has sold for $80,000. The Texas couple that bred the horse says they're tickled pink about the sale. SDPB's Lee Strubinger has more.
We now welcome a young lady who loves our country.
It's December 4th, 2020, and the grand opening of the National Rodeo Finals in Arlington, Texas.
The Honorable Governor of South Dakota, Miss Kristi Noem.
Governor Kristi Noem rides a tan Palomino gelding named Magic out to the center of the arena, a U.S. flag in her right hand. A buyer in Utah bought the Palomino gelding from the Diamond McNabb Ranch horse sale in Douglas, Wyoming on June 5th for $80,000.
That's a lot of money.
That's Jane Bagley of Dimmitt, Texas. Jane and her husband Scott own Bagley Performance Horses. Jane says they didn't sell the horse, but
we're thrilled that something with our brand has sold for that much money. It seems like that market has gone up now anywhere from minimum to $12,000 on up to the sky's the limit, just depending on who likes him the best.
The Bagleys donated Magic to the Young Horse Development Program through the American Quarter Horse Association. Trevor Klein got Magic as a colt through that program in 2016. He sold the horse in August, a few months before Governor Noem rode him at the finals. He says he's not surprised Magic fetched that kind of money. Klein says Magic was one of his favorite horses.
Whenever he got 2-3 years old, I started training him. He was cool. He was a good horse. You could do anything on him. If you want to go sort anything out of the herd, you could go sort anything out of the herd. If you want to go rope something, you could. I really didn't want to sell him whenever I sold him, but I had too many horses, and he was the one that was going to bring the most money in.
Breeder Jane Bagley says some geldings can bring in thousands more than what Magic sold for, but she suspects Noem may have helped it go for as much as it did. For South Dakota Public Broadcasting, I'm Lee Strubinger in Rapid City.
For SDPB News, I'm John Wynn.
And I'm Lori Walsh. Will South Dakotans be able to legally source their medical marijuana through the Flandreau Santee Sioux Tribe before they find it elsewhere in the state? Joe Sneevy is a reporter from the Argus Leader, and he's joining me inside the Kirby Family Studio at SDPB Sioux Falls Studio for a look at his reporting for this assignment. You can find his work online at argusleader.com. Joe, welcome. Thanks for being here.
Thanks so much for having me. Your studio is beautiful.
Thank you. You are welcome anytime. And you have been reporting, as many people throughout the state of South Dakota and beyond have been reporting on medical marijuana and this fight. But this is an interesting article because it looks at the possibility that the state of South Dakota is behind tribes on implementation. Tell us a big picture here of what your reporting uncovered.
Well, the official messaging out of Pierre is, yes, next Thursday, July 1st, medical marijuana becomes legal. IM-26 takes effect, but all intents and purposes, nothing actually changes until they get their program set up and they start issuing cards. And during some committee hearings, you know, the question of what about the reservations and the tribes comes up, and the response from the state is somewhat telling. They don't want to acknowledge that there's kind of this gray area. So that got me thinking and looking at the Flandreau's Santee Sioux Tribe's marijuana control ordinance and looking at the overlap, and the state health officials would be correct, but for the existence of the Flandreau tribe. The reality is because their program up there isn't going to discriminate tribal members versus non-tribal members, anybody with a doctor's recommendation is going to be able to obtain a card through the Flandreau tribe if they can get themselves to Flandreau to turn in that paperwork and whatnot. And we know Flandreau is preparing to sell marijuana in some shape or form before the state is ready this fall. That opens the possibility that you're going to be able to buy marijuana legally in Flandreau, even if you're not a tribal member, if you're a qualifying patient, and you're going to be able to have this card that's issued from the tribe. It's also an IM-26 non-resident cards have to be honored, so if you take that marijuana back home, that card should protect you. And even if you don't buy your marijuana on the tribal land, the transaction, I suppose, would continue to be illegal, but once the marijuana is in your possession and you own this card, you're protected from arrest and prosecution.
So does the card come from your physician? A prescription comes from the physician. The card comes from the issuer of the medical marijuana itself.
The card comes from the governmental entity that okay. is running the medical marijuana program. So outside of the reservations, that will be the Department of Health. On the tribe in Flandreau, that will be the Flandreau Santee Sioux Tribe. Does that answer
yeah.
your question?
Yeah, the economic impact of this. I know clearly people who are, pursuing medical marijuana for the conditions that they have and are waiting for this to take an impact. There's a health impact if you can travel again mm-hmm. and make it to Flandreau. But the economic impact for Flandreau being ahead of other dispensaries or other programs, what did you find out about that?
Well, in discussions with lawmakers who tend to be on the more progressive side of this debate, they are concerned that because the state hasn't been, I guess, enthusiastic about pushing this forward, these deadlines that the state's operating under are just that, they're deadlines. They could get these rules done early if they so choose. But all indications are they're going to take their time and wait until the fall. So if Flandreau is able to stand up its program, that's a lot of money that otherwise could have been spent in Sioux Falls or Parker, South Dakota, or Del Rapids. Should those communities have been ready, if the state was ready? Mike Roll, senator out of Aberdeen, said he anticipates thousands and thousands of dollars will be spent in Flandreau between July 1st and early 2022, when state licensed stores outside of the reservations will start to offer marijuana products.
So I'm guessing if a representative from the State Department of Health was here, they would say, well, we're going to take the time to do this right. It's complicated. We want our regulations to be clear. We want to avoid abuse. It's mm-hmm. not so much about enthusiasm. It's about, due diligence. Was Flandreau that far ahead of this? Like, what are you getting from that? Is it really an enthusiasm issue, or was Flandreau making plans?
Well, it's a little bit of both, I think. That's the way I assess it. Certainly, Flandreau had a turnkey operation. In 2015, The tribal council voted to legalize marijuana completely with plans to open a marijuana resort. Folks were going to have to consume the marijuana on the reservation then because the voters hadn't done what they did in November at that point. But after pressure from the Attorney General's office and the feds, they backed off those plans. But their cultivation facility was essentially still there, just not running. So on November 3rd, when the votes came in, Flandreau was able to essentially just turn the key back on to their cultivation plant. And they had had these internal conversations as a tribe in 2015. And I don't know that state officials here got serious about what was going to happen until after it happened.
Right. A little pandemic action going on in the State Department of Health is too. So that might kind of also intersect with that. Again, no one's here to speak on their behalf. So I guess I would throw that out there as well with everything that's happening with the small staff. And We're just scratching the surface here, but I would refer you to Joe Sneevy's work online at argusleader.com and our coverage of this issue, mostly from Lee Strubinger at this point, sdpb.org/news. Lots of people are interested in how medical marijuana will unfold in the state. Really exciting time to be a journalist. Difficult time if you're looking to move forward and get the treatment that you need. Yeah. But Joe, thanks for stopping by and seeing us and giving us an update. We appreciate it.
Yeah, thanks very much. Watch the website this afternoon. We have more coverage on this topic coming.
Hot tip. You heard it here. ArgusLeader.com. Thanks, Joe. Ahead on the program, SDPB's Ariel Zients reports on Monday's naturalization ceremony for new Americans at Mount Rushmore National Memorial. You're listening to In the Moment on South Dakota Public Broadcasting.
Program funding by Arts South Dakota, the annual Arts Education Institute, Band Director Institute, and First Annual Choral Director Institute go online July 12th through the 16th with grad credit available. Register at artssouthdakota.org.
Every story has a beginning. Think back to when your journey with SDPB began. Was it waking up with Morning Edition? Finishing your day with Jazz Nightly? SDPB is your constant companion during your commute, whether that is across town or across the state, informing you in times of crisis, or beginning a relaxing weekend with laughter on Saturday morning. SDPB has been part of the fabric of South Dakota for nearly a century, and SDPB is part of your story. I'm Ryan Hallett, the Development Director at Friends of South Dakota Public Broadcasting. This week, we're asking for your support to continue to make outstanding news and entertainment on the radio. Please consider a gift. You can do so online at sdpb.org/donate or by calling 800-333-0789. SDPB, building community one story at a time.
Program funding by the Sanford Underground Research Facility, supporting public outreach through its free science festival, Neutrino Day, Star Chronicles. Join the fun in our virtual science town July 9th through the 10th. More at neutrinoday.com and sanfordlab.org.
Business and community development reporting on SDPB is supported by SDN Communications. Learn more at sdncommunications.com.
You're listening to In the Moment on South Dakota Public Broadcasting. Well, SDPB has a new business and economic development reporter, Ariel Zients, and she's joining me now from inside the Black Hills Surgical Hospital studio at SDPB's Black Hills studio. Ariel, welcome to the team. Thanks for being here.
Of course. Thank you for having me.
We are going to jump right into some of your recent coverage for SDPB because you're going to take us to Mount Rushmore National Memorial for a naturalization ceremony. Tell me a little bit about that day.
Sure. So they have had naturalization ceremonies there in the past, but this was the first one since 2018. These happen across the country. Some people have them in pretty mundane locations. These people got to experience it at a national monument. It was in the amphitheater, and they had their friends and family come, and some people purposely attended because it was advertised a bit, but a lot of people in the audience had just, they're tourists who just stumbled upon it and they decided to sit down and everyone was smiling. To me, the highlight was there's 55 people from 29 different countries, and each person walked across the stage one by one said their name, where they're from, and then some also gave quick comments. And we have a clip, a little collage of this.
Hello, I'm Svetlana Tsimbalis from Ukrainian. God bless America.
Good morning, I'm Luan. My name is Shemki Al-Kutaifi. I am from Iraq.
Good morning, America. I am so excited to be a United States citizen, and I am from Zimbabwe. My name is Hazel.
Hello, everyone. I'm Vamwe Moses Kroma. I'm from West Africa, Sierra Leone. I appreciate of becoming an American. Thank you.
Some voices there from the naturalization ceremony on Monday at Mount Rushmore. Arielle Zients is with us. She was at that event. Arielle, it's hard not to get a little bit choked up about some of those stories because you can hear the enthusiasm in their voices. Tell me a little bit about some of the people that we have more from.
First person is Karen Mortley, and I spoke with her and her friend Celine. They're both from Jamaica. They didn't know each other there, but they were both nurses, and they were recruited to Monument Health, where they've worked for 5 years. And then after 5 years, they applied. And that's a theme. You can't just become a U.S. citizen. It's a whole process.
Yeah.
Celine works in the ICU. Karen is going to be moving to Georgia. And Karen talked about what she made of that part I just mentioned where everyone introduced themselves.
I just think it's incredible. It shows that we live in a global economy, that the world is opening up and we are all one, you know. So it was pretty good, pretty emotional. And I think it will be good overall for, you know, for society.
So I also spoke with Salab Naimi. He is from Afghanistan and he worked as a translator there for the U.S. military from 2011 to 2014. It took him 2.5 years to get a visa to come to the United States, and he arrived here in 2019, and then he redeployed for a year, and he became a citizen, and that itself was another 5-year process.
Wow.
And he wanted to move here and become a citizen because a lot of people who work with the U.S. military might face retaliation from some of the extremists there because they're viewed as traitors. And he now lives in Sioux Falls with his wife and 2 daughters. They go to school there, and he's a crane operator now.
You just have to prove them that who you are and why you want to move to the United States. And so I was interpreter, I was a linguist, I was supporting their mission, and they know that, you know, we were not really safe over there. So, and then there was some process of documentation you had to provide and some recommendation letters and stuff like that. So, yeah, it's a long process, yeah.
A long process, a long journey. Tell us who's next.
Next is Val Rhodes, and she's 73. So she's from England, near the town where Shakespeare is from.
Sure.
And she met her husband when he served in the Air Force for 22 years, and they met while he was stationed in England. They've been married for 42 years. They moved to the U.S. She joked with me that she didn't think she could become a citizen because she hasn't lost her British accent and gained an American one. But And while she was here, she ran a Christian Montessori school, and some of the kids who she raised attended this ceremony, which is, you know, they were little kids and now they're adults.
They're adults, yeah.
Yes. And what convinced her was thinking, like, what if her husband passed away? What would happen to her citizenship? We'll hear a clip right now where she talks about another important reason that some people want to become citizens.
I see things happening in the political era, and I have much to say about it, but not a vote, so I figured it was time to have a say that counted.
New Americans taking their role as voters seriously, as Arielle Zients was at Mount Rushmore on Monday to cover this naturalization ceremony. Arielle, if you've got just a couple more minutes, I want to hear a little bit of your background and how you came not to America but to SDPB, because it's an interesting journey as well. You were at the Rapid City Journal before. Tell me a little bit about how you came to South Dakota and where you're originally from.
Sure. I grew up in a suburb of Chicago, and then once I graduated high school, I've lived in many states and the District of Columbia. Mm-hmm. And I did radio production in D.C. My boss was a nun, at a radio yeah. show that was about the intersection of religion, culture, and politics. I was a producer there.
Catholic Nun.
Yes.
Okay.
Yes. And then I was a general assignment reporter in Nogales, Arizona, which is south of Tucson and right on the border with Mexico. So I could literally walk to Mexico from my house. That's much quicker than driving. And I really got a passion for local news there. We were hyper-local, covering just one county or anything that happened on the border, but only on the border of our county.
Sure.
And then I moved to Rapid City about 2.5 years ago, where I was the criminal justice reporter at the Rapid City Journal, but I covered a lot of other topics. And then I came here, where I'm excited to cover statewide news. I guess just like my message to listeners is like, please reach out if you have story ideas or if you have a question, if there's something you don't understand or that you're confused about, that could turn into a story. And, you know, the title is Business and Economic Development, but it's really anything about the economy or money. So, I mean, that could be a new business like Amazon coming in, but it's also how money impacts your life. So it's things like housing, cost of living, you know, how people are getting by, the success stories and the struggles as well.
And you can find Arielle's work and see photos of the naturalization ceremony on our website at sdpb.org/news. Follow her on Twitter at AJZients and contact her via email at ariellezients@sdpb.org. Quick spelling, ARIELLE.Zients, ZIONTS, at sdpb.org. We'll put that and her direct phone number up on our website under today's episode notes. Ahead on the program, author Stephen Wingate joins us for a look at his latest book, The Leave Takers. He is in the studio with me, and you're listening to In the Moment on South Dakota Public Broadcasting.
Program funding by Denny Menholt, Rushmore Honda in Rapid City, inviting you to experience the peace of mind and more that come with driving a certified vehicle from Denny Menholt, Rushmore Honda. See you at Denny Menholt, Rushmore Honda, Rapid City.
Every story has a beginning. Think back to when your journey with SDPB began. Was it waking up with Morning Edition? Finishing your day with Jazz Nightly? SDPB is your constant companion during your commute, whether that is across town or across the state, informing you in times of crisis, or beginning a relaxing weekend with laughter on Saturday morning. SDPB has been part of the fabric of South Dakota for nearly a century, and SDPB is part of your story. I'm Ryan Hallett, the Development Director at Friends of South Dakota Public Broadcasting. This week, we're asking for your support to continue to make outstanding news and entertainment on the radio. Please consider a gift. You can do so online at sdpb.org/donate or by calling 800-333-0789. SDPB, building community one story at a time.
Program funding provided by First Dakota National Bank, supporting the businesses and individuals with a dream and the passion and drive to make it a reality. What will be your South Dakota first? More at firstdakota.com/first.
You're listening to In the Moment on South Dakota Public Broadcasting. I am Lori Walsh. Well, later this hour, we are welcoming South Dakota's poet laureate, Christine Stewart, to the program. We'll talk about her latest collection called The Poet and the Architect. But first, another one of our state's premier authors is joining me in the SDPB Sioux Falls studios today. Stephen Wingate's latest novel is called The Leave Takers. It's an intimate yet expansive story of grief, addiction, and desire. The novel takes readers to richly imagined settings in South Dakota, including Hot Springs and the Clark area. There, Jacob Nasruddin from Boston and Lainey Jackman from Los Angeles struggled to survive, heal, and somehow merge their lives in an isolated and windblown landscape. Stephen Wingate, welcome back. Thanks for being here.
It's great to be here, Lori. Thank you.
So nice to see you in person post-pandemic and know that there was great things coming out of a not-so-great time.
Yes.
Yes. Tell me a little bit about the importance of outsiders on the inside of South Dakota and seeing this space from their eyes, because
they don't want to be here. They want to be here. They can't be anywhere else. Outsiders in South Dakota. Let's start there.
Well, I don't have any choice but to be one because I'm not from around here, so my perspective is limited. And when I first got here in 2011, I was really struggling to write any fiction because I thought, okay, here I am in this place, and place usually really is a huge effect, has a huge effect on my fiction. I start from place, and I was here, and I just didn't know the place well enough to write any fiction. So I actually abandoned fiction for a while and started doing digital projects. I went electronic, and then eventually I got so overwhelmed by code that I just had to stop going electronic, and I thought, what's next? And I started going back to fiction with more of a regional focus, realizing that Colorado was one sort of the western pole of my experience of the Great Plains, and now South Dakota was the eastern pole of my experience of the Great Plains. So kind of rebirthed myself a bit as a fiction writer of the Great Plains, and having a book published in the Flyover Fiction Series from the University of Nebraska really kind of helped to cement that. And this new book is also published in that series. So I'm very aware of geography in that sense. And in terms of South Dakota or anywhere, I think it's important to have outsiders writing about the stories they experience because outsiders are here. we're part of the landscape. There's just no escaping to people who are not from here. And honestly, I think it can be a little dangerous if the literature of a place simply demands that only card-carrying regionalists can write about it, because then, well, as we know, the people who are part of the in-group are much less likely to talk freely and honestly about what goes in the in-group. You know, what happens in Fight Club stays in Fight Club. And if we have a regional literature that is only by people who say they're from that region, we're going to miss some outside perspectives. So that's what I embraced. It allowed me to write this book, which I tend to sit on my projects for a really long time. And this had been a Colorado book for years. But when I decided to get back into fiction and decided to finally tackle writing about this region, it seemed rather than come up with a new story, what I should do is just reset this one. And it really unfolded for me in wonderful ways, precisely because of that dynamic you talked about with people who are in their place and have real ups and down feelings about it, aren't really settled into it.
Do you think, as a professor at South Dakota State University as well, that we can be a bit precious about our literary heritage in the sense that it does take on that insider status, and because we have a sense of scarcity? Like, you know, every book represents us so in an outsourced way, because it's not like, you know, the South, for example, which has, you know, so many different books you could get a degree in Southern literature. And so how should we look at reading fiction of place, of the place where we currently live?
Well, I think what you just said about that scarcity making for kind of that sort of insularity is very true. And it's interesting, having spent a lot of time in Colorado, I mean, I'm kind of from Colorado, and I watched that literature grow from the point where they might not have had enough books to run a Colorado book award, mm-hmm, in a given category in 1 year, to a place where it's massively competitive, and there's just a ton of people. And that took place over the course of 25 years or so. I think as more people write and as more people publish in a place, that sense of scarcity and in-groupness goes away, and you maybe get a more robust set of perspectives on a place.
Mm-hmm. Let's talk a little bit for readers who are new to this particular work about these two main characters. And I want to start with Jacob and this road trip, this traveling, and he has this companion who turns out to have nuances that you might not expect in the first, you know, two paragraphs, and then it unfolds and you realize who he is in communication with and why. Tell us a little bit about Jacob and his brother.
Well, Jacob is a lost soul whose brother is an even more lost soul. They were teenagers when their father committed an act of family violence that ended in the death of their mother and of the father's own death, and they have been on the run from that ever since. And Daniel is no longer alive. He had committed suicide a year before this novel starts. And Jacob is in touch with him. Jacob's a person who's really, really wrapped up in the lives of the dead, shall we say. They figure, his mother, his father, and especially his brother, figure in his day-to-day life. So in a sense, this is a little bit like the Joan Didion book, The Year of Magical Thinking, of you know, how the dead just kind of stay with us. And they're there, not just in our dreams, but we think about, oh, I should ask so-and-so. Oh, mm-hmm. But so-and-so is not here. And Jacob is really ruled by that. He's a man who's just trying really hard to keep it together. And he's got a lot of rules for his own life. To try to kind of keep himself on the straight and narrow so that he doesn't end up going on the same path as the other men in his family.
Mm-hmm. And then similar to Joan Didion's Year of Magical Thinking, where she would have her husband's shoes and be afraid to get rid of them because he might come back and step immediately into them and inhabit them again, we have Lainey, who is doing something of the opposite. She is leaving behind the objects in mysterious places as she takes a road trip of her own and saying, I no longer need this, I no longer need this. Where can you tell me where that beautiful idea came from?
I really don't know.
Yeah.
And
aren't those the best beautiful ideas?
Yeah, it's somewhere. I mean, maybe I saw it and I just expanded on it, or maybe some culture does this and I read about them. I don't know. But that's the essence of Lainey, is to try to give away the objects of the dead and to sort of put them back into recirculation. So Jacob has a shrine room full of the old objects, and Lainey just wants to get rid of the old objects. And it's sort of the immovable force meets the, or you know, what is it, the unstoppable force meets the immovable object? I'm sorry, I get that football metaphor all mixed up. But their lives, they're coming together again as a couple, because they had been a couple years before. They're coming together again really revolves around coming to some kind of terms about how they're going to deal with the dead.
Yeah.
And, you know, the dead are, they're always around us. It's sort of like William Faulkner saying, you know, the past isn't really past. Well, the dead, are they really dead, or are they just not accessible to us? I don't want to get too woo-woo about it, but I think that, you know, the dead certainly feel to me like they're around.
And then how are we going to deal with life? And specifically, how are we going to deal with life with each other? Because are we together? Are we good for each other? We're drawn together. And that reminds me a little of Donna Tartt's The Goldfinch, with these two people who have similar stories, very different stories, but similar themes, and are trying to wrestle with the fact that, is this good because we really understand each other? Or is this a force of ultimate destruction that will bring us both down? There's Lainey, there's Jacob, and then there's Lainey and Jacob. Mm-hmm. And there are different dynamics for each of them. How does addiction fall into all this? Because then also they have this other thing in common, which is a certain affection for pills.
Mm. I think they're really kind of the same thing. Mm-hmm. I think their addiction to pills is a really similar thing to their desire to keep the dead alive. And neither of those things are going to kind of go away on their own for them. I think they have to figure out how to let both of those needs go, and let go of the dead, knowing that the dead really aren't necessarily going to go very far away. Mm. There's a certain kind of a connection to oblivion when you are feeling in contact with the dead. You feel like you're not limited or bound by whatever is in front of you. And the same thing happens when you're on pills. They particularly like painkillers and anti-anxiety meds and sedatives. And they can get that same kind of oblivion from both of those sources. And it's kind of an addiction to oblivion with a I think, an imperfect understanding of oblivion and how it can function for us as actually a healthy healing thing.
Right. And for clarity, we're not talking about the anti-anxiety meds that your physician provided for you that you very much need. We're talking about a use of these pills in, ways that are creating something different than would probably be healthy in some contexts.
They're recreational users, but they're really, honestly, they're self-medicators. And they're the kind of people who can let their addictions string out for decades if they allow them, because they say, well, I'll just have a few here and then I'll stop. And they do. And I've known people like that who are able to really, really let it go on for a long time, even with some very, very hard drugs.
Yeah. I want to talk a little bit more about place, but first I'm hoping that you will read for us. If you will read an excerpt from The Leave Takers, do you need to set it up at all?
Well, I'll just set it up a tiny bit. This is Lainey coming from Los Angeles, and she's on a cross-country drive getting rid of stuff on her way to Jacob's house in eastern South Dakota, and she's right around the Badlands. Lainey gassed up and headed to Sage Creek Road, which wound through ancient limestone and meticulous farms and into Badlands National Park, which looked unspectacular at first. Dry, scrubby earth and rock that crumbled into pale dirt, not much different than what she'd seen on the way in. But then she saw a horde of two distant bison and a clutch of pronghorns, and the landscape grew more extraterrestrial, spires and striations in red and pink and white, knuckles of rock folded in on each other. A dozen histories of earth, each one pressed into sedimentary rock millions of years ago and buckled up again by other histories, asserting themselves and declaring themselves equally true. Lainey felt tiny, which was simultaneously freeing and dangerous. Being a speck in an endless sea made her own problems infinitesimal, which meant she didn't need to fret over her failures or run to the shelter of pills. On the other hand, being a speck meant she might as well disappear. She couldn't do that in the touristy Badlands, but 20 miles back on Spring Creek Road, she could have let herself be sucked into the navel of the world and absorbed into whichever layer of its crumbled histories would take her. At Hay Butte Overlook, upjutting gray-tan rocks went on and seemed like people to her, silently congregating and waiting for something. What? The same thing she waited for, which didn't have a name. The same thing the mountain goats waited for, standing at weirdly canted angles on the rock like they'd been glued onto it. The goats didn't care if what they waited for didn't have a name, Lainey reasoned. Why should she? Seeking names was an inevitable part of her human inheritance, a glitch in one of those histories periodically upturned by the earth and lifted to the surface, only to erode with time. Whatever name she found for the thing she waited for would be similarly upturned and replaced. So why bother with names at all?
Stephen Wingate reading from The Leave Takers. I love that passage so much. It is what I had marked in my copy as well, hoping that you would read. So there we go. We didn't even talk about that. The book is available in bookstores and online now. Thank you. Come back anytime to talk more about this.
Thank you. Can't wait. It's wonderful. Lovely.
Let's take a moment now and head to Clear Lake, South Dakota. The annual Crystal Springs Rodeo takes place just north of town tomorrow through Saturday. It's set in the world's most natural rodeo bowl, where you can find a spot on the hillside. You won't find bleachers for this rodeo. Spread out your blanket and take in the action, just like people have been doing there since the mid-1940s. Dustin Evans is playing concerts to celebrate 75 years of the Crystal Springs Rodeo. That's Friday and Saturday nights. And Chris Uechert and his father sold milkshakes at the rodeo when he was a boy. Uechert is now director of the rodeo, and here's his tip for new rodeo goers. Bring along some warm things, jackets and blankets, because even though it's blistering in the daytime, sunset brings cooler temperatures and nighttime can be plain cold, even in the summer. Temperatures in Clear Lake tomorrow show a high near 92. Highs will gradually decrease into the low to mid-70s on Friday and Saturday. Skies should be partly sunny with the exception of a cloudy Friday, and lows are expected to be near 60 Thursday through Saturday. Clear Lake, like hundreds of other Midwestern cities, owes its existence to the railroads. Many farm residents moved to the town site after Clear Lake was incorporated in 1885. The strategic location of Clear Lake in Dual County made it the perfect choice for the county seat. What else do you need to know about Clear Lake? Well, bring your fishing gear and cast into one of the many area lakes, or browse the garage and yard sales that coincide with this week's rodeo. If you're looking for additional dining and shopping options, you can always make a quick run to Watertown. That's just a 30-minute drive away. And if you're camping or looking to stock your cooler, Maynard's Food Market's right on South Dakota Highway 15. That's just south of those rodeo grounds. Or have the Pizza and Burger Shack whip up some pies for you and your crew. They're open mornings, and their breakfast pizza is a favorite with rodeo fans. The rodeo life, it's all about family, and families have made the Crystal Springs Rodeo one of South Dakota's great summertime events for 75 years. Ahead on the program, Chris Loffrey talks with Martina Luby about her rodeo days. You can find all our rodeo coverage on our website at sdpb.org/spotlight. You're in the moment on listener-supported South Dakota Public Broadcasting.
Program funding by the Sanford Underground Research Facility, supporting public outreach through its free science festival, Neutrino Day, Star Chronicles. Join the fun in our virtual science town July 9th through the 10th. More at neutrinoday.com and sanfordlab.org.
Hi, I'm Julie Overgaard, Executive Director of SDPB. The Sound Vision campaign is allowing us to get the message out of our high-quality programming. SDPB is the golden standard of public broadcasting and is critical to getting the news, stories, and entertainment of South Dakota to South Dakotans. A gift to the Sound Vision campaign will give SDPB the opportunity to reach deeper into our community to share these amazing stories and entertainment. Make a gift to the Sound Vision campaign and help build community one story at a time. Be as generous as you can. No matter the amount, you power this station to serve all of us. You can play a part in guaranteeing that SDPB serves the state for years to come. Give online at sdpb.org/donate or call 800-333-0789. Again, 800-333-0789. And thank you so much for your support.
Program funding by the South Dakota Humanities Council, presenting this year's One Book South Dakota, The Children's Blizzard by Melanie Benjamin. Learn more about her virtual author tour and in-person Festival of Books appearance at sdhumanities.org.
You're listening to In the Moment on South Dakota Public Broadcasting. I'm Lori Walsh. South Dakota is sending a competitor to the National Miss Rodeo America pageant in Las Vegas. This year, Miss Rodeo South Dakota is Martina Luby. Martina is a fourth-generation rodeo queen. She's an advocate for the ag industry, for rodeo, and for South Dakota. She needs leadership, intelligence, equine knowledge, and horsemanship skills to wear the sash. SDPB's Chris Loffrey caught up with our rodeo queen to learn more for this SDPB Spotlight.
Take us back to what got you interested in rodeo, if you would.
Yeah, so my grandma was actually a rodeo queen. She was the Faith Stock Show queen in 1956, but I had two cousins that queened as well, and we always grew up going to rodeos. We always went to the Black Hills Roundup over the 4th of July. That's actually where I determined I wanted to be a queen after watching them in the parade and rodeos. So I went through my cousin to find out who the contacts were to get me started somewhere.
So does this go back to when you were really little?
I started rodeo queening the summer between my eighth grade and freshman year of high school. So I was 13, I believe.
So pretty safe to say then you were involved in Teen Miss Rodeo South Dakota.
Yes, very safe to say that, yeah.
So did you, besides the people you just mentioned, did you look up to past Miss Rodeo Queens? If so, was there one that made more of an impact on you than the other? And if so, how?
Yeah, there were a couple. Like I said, the first Miss Rodeo South Dakota I ever met, her name was Vanessa Tournay. She was from Belle Fouche. And I got to ask her questions about what it took to be a rodeo queen. But then that's when I learned that we had a current Miss Rodeo America who was from South Dakota. Her name was Mackenzie Haley Weiss now, but she was from Winter. And I didn't even know her, but she was just gorgeous. I loved watching her videos. She was so professional. She was hilarious. And she was just very inspiring to me. And that's somebody who I have always looked up to since the very beginning.
Talk about the process, if you will, of becoming Miss Rodeo South Dakota. What's that like?
You know, if you've ever watched the Miss America pageant or Miss USA, it's similar to that, except our talent is horsemanship. So we go through a process of horsemanship interviews, personality interviews. We answer on stage impromptu questions. We give a speech. We take part in a fashion show. And then horsemanship, we do not bring our own horses. When you have smaller titles, you usually would bring your own horse. But as you get older, they provide horses for you that you may have never been on. And somebody has them saddled for you. You don't get to warm them up at all, but you have a pattern that you have to perform with them. So you would make lope circles in the arena, stop them, back them, do some spins, do lead changes with them, and you try and do the very best you can with a horse that you are not familiar with.
So what you just described then is the definition of the word horsemanship.
Yes.
That's interesting. So yep. Outside of that, then, I'm just curious if you've got any experience in rodeo events itself, like barrel racing or things like that.
In high school, I did. I did high school rodeo. I was just in the queen contest in barrel racing. But looking back now, it was just something fun that I did. I was not super competitive. Mm-hmm. I had an older horse that I used who was used in barrel racing in her younger years, but I was just getting started, so she was the perfect teammate. But hopefully in the future, after I'm done rodeo queening, I can get back into actually competing in rodeo.
So as Miss Rodeo South Dakota, explain in detail, if you will, because I'm curious, what your role is.
So my role is to serve as basically the first lady of professional rodeo in South Dakota. And so I represent the cowboys that are with the PRCA, the Professional Rodeo Cowboys Association, cowboys and cowgirls. I represent the rodeos that we have here all the way up from, you know, 4-H, amateur, high school, you know, PRCA. We mostly work with the PRCA, but I'm an advocate for, you know, kids coming up through the ranks, if you will. And I am also an advocate for the agriculture industry and educating people about, you know, how agriculture and rodeo are related to one another and kind of bridge the gap and show people what we do, what we're about, and bring in brand new fans to rodeo.
I'm more curious if you can expand a little bit when you say represent. You're a representative, I understand that part. When you say you represent cowboys and cowgirls, go into a little more detail on how you represent those people.
Sure. So just when I was talking about some of the portions of the pageant that we competed, mm-hmm. our interviews, oftentimes we will get asked about contestants in our own state. So maybe somebody who's made it to the NFR. So like Lisa Lockhart is from Ulrich, South Dakota, and she's made it to the NFR countless times in the barrel racing. But we have to be knowledgeable about the people in our state competing. And so when somebody comes up to me and they want to know more about the saddle bronc riding, I can explain the event to them. But I can say, hey, this is Cole Elsher from Faith, South Dakota, and he's been to the NFR, and he's a saddle bronc rider. And so I have to be very knowledgeable about people, where they're from, what events that they do, and their accomplishments.
So there's way more to this than just being the rodeo queen. Because, well, I mean, I had no idea. That's interesting.
Yep, there is a lot to it, that's for sure.
So you must have to know all about the events and all about the people. So that's quite an undertaking. So then is there travel involved in this, or is it pretty much in South Dakota?
No, there's a lot of travel involved. My priority is to stay in South Dakota and first and foremost be at the PRCA rodeos in South Dakota. But I've traveled to Denver to the National Western Stock Show. I got to go to Steamboat Springs and take part in the Cowboy Downhill. I got to go to Rodeo Houston in Houston, Texas. I've been in Florida, Oklahoma. Abbeville was my most recent trip as a rodeo queen to different rodeos and get to share other state rodeo experiences.
You mentioned NFR earlier, and I meant to just clarify that that's National Finals Rodeo for those that don't know. How do you prepare? I know what's next for Martina Luby. How do you prepare for Miss Rodeo America, which is in Las Vegas this December?
Right. And there is a lot of studying. Just like I mentioned before, we try and read everything possible. We go over the PRCA rulebook, the media guide, which is where they keep all of their world records and world champions, biographies on all of the cowboys within the PRCA. We study the Pro Rodeo Sports News magazine to keep up to date on current events happening in the rodeo world. But we also have to be up to date on current events and then equine knowledge as well. And so we study a lot of vet books to try and be as knowledgeable as we can. And we watch a lot of news and we just try and keep the most up-to-date information in our brains as much as we can, so we're prepared for anything.
Our rodeo queen prepared to represent South Dakota in Las Vegas this December in the national competition. Martina Luby is from Sturgis. Ready to unveil her new poetry book, The Poet and the Architect, Christine Stewart Nunez says the title speaks to her relationship with her husband, Brian Rex, head of South Dakota State University's Department of Architecture, but also to their two different ways of looking at art and places. Stewart Nunez is South Dakota's Poet Laureate and celebrating the release of her new book Thursday evening at 6:30 Central via Zoom.
Architecture.
The Brookings Public Library is having a showing in the Copper Room. Christine, welcome.
Hi, how are you today?
I am excellent. Nice to hear your voice. I am so thrilled that you have a new collection, no matter what it is. And then as soon as I touched base with what we were talking about, I was even more thrilled because it just seems like a natural thing. Like, oh, Christine is going to knock this one out of the park because of what I know about your writing. Why write about your marriage and the similar and different ways that an architect and a poet see the world?
Well, because that was when Brian and I got married, I didn't know much about architecture at all. And I still probably don't know that much about architecture. But what I have learned is that it's about making place. Yeah. And it's about making buildings and making spaces in between buildings and making things in front of buildings and making communities and urban centers and all sorts of things. And as I learned about this placemaking and learned and listened to Brian talk about it, and I talked about my work and my writing, what I realized is that there's a lot of similar artistic practices that we share. We just have we have different ways of talking about them. We have different words for them. We definitely have different practices in terms of, I like to have lots of time to write and prepare for things. I work way ahead of the deadline, and he likes to stay up till 3 and 4 in the morning to mm-hmm. complete projects. That's where he feels the most creative. But other than that, there are so many ways that the process of inspiration and iteration and drafting is similar.
Yeah. One of the things that you talk about is form. When you're away, I consider form, for example, as a poem talking about the Sistina and the Villanelle and bringing that into that architecture of relationship. Tell me a little bit about where that sort of came from, that idea of poetic form and how it is worked, you know, how it evolves into this build space.
Well, I'm really glad you noticed that because that was the main intellectual project for me in this book, was to consider form in the way of the way the poems were in forms. I used a lot of traditional forms, but then I made up some forms. And that was because, also there's like a form to the book where it spirals out from really intimate poems to more public, more like looking at placemaking in our community and in our world. Yeah. But that's because its structure and architecture is so important. You know, it's often all about how you create structures of interaction. And what I started to see in our relationship and how we've built this, our family, and how we sustain our family, is that there's a lot of the same practices in terms of, well, you try something, it works, or it doesn't work, you go and you try again, and you maybe do a little bit of research, and you try it again, you try something new, something different. And that can just be in terms of making two people's lives mesh that are two very ambitious lives,
yeah.
ambitious makers, I guess,
yeah.
in terms of art.
Here is one of my experiences as a reader. I know you're probably going to predict what I'm going to say, but this is a line from the poem Remodel, and it says, "You drew me in with a strong hand like the blue line arcs you fanned across paper." And when I read that line in this broader poem, I thought, I did not know that I needed that line until I read it. And I was like, huh. It's so intimate, it's so personal, but yet it's so universal at the same time. There's so much longing in there for anyone who has ever longed to connect and feel love. Every architect in the future is going to get a date from this.
Well, I remember one time watching him draw,
yeah.
and it's just incredible to see him, because a lot of architects work with computer, but he draws a lot, and yeah. it's really amazing.
There's just something so much about your lives there. Tell me a little bit about the launching of this book in our last 30 seconds and how people can hear you read from it and ask you questions and connect, because this is not the last time we're going to talk about the poet and
okay.
the architect for sure.
Right. So I have some events coming up Thursday at the Brookings Public Library. It's Zoom and in person, so it'll be hybrid, 6:30. And then this is just hot off the email press, but I'll be reading in Sioux Falls at Full Circle Bookstore July 15th, and also in McCrory Gardens here in Brookings again on July 13th. I'll do a book signing in Brookings at the Farmers Market on July 10th, sponsored by the Brookings Arts Council. So I've got a bunch of events yeah. coming up, and I'll put them on my website too.
Yes, and we will link to that website after our program. This is just really one, this is a book you want to get and spend some time with, because it is not the last time you'll hear about the awards or the next event with this. Christine Stewart, thank you so much for being here with us. We really appreciate your time.
Thank you. I appreciate it too.